welcome back to Regionally Speaking. I'm your host, Dee Dotson.
Lakeshore Public Media is behind a new, free, and transformative tool for local organizations, government municipalities, and businesses that offers streamlined processes and enhanced capabilities to optimize volunteer coordination and operational efficiency. The Digital Volunteer Program showcases features including profile creation, event listing, volunteer hour tracking, and scheduling formalities. Organizations can now effectively harness the power of volunteerism to advance their mission and serve the community. Joining me now in studio is Lakeshore Public Media's President and CEO, Chuck Roberts, as well as Carl Keurig, the Vice President of Development. Chuck and Carl, thank you for joining me today on Regionally Speaking.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, I'm always happy to be in the studio, Dee.
Absolutely. So I am just so excited to have you two in studio with me to talk about the new initiative that was recently kicked off. So again, Lakeshore Public Media is excited to unveil the new NWI Volunteer Hub, which is a comprehensive digital volunteer program that any nonprofit, civic, faith, or health-related organization, a government municipality, or a business here in the region can use, and I should add, at no cost, thanks to support from our amazing community foundation partners. So Chuck, tell our listening audience more about this new online platform.
So I've gone to many community meetings, and I heard a lot from a lot of different organizations that there is diminishing numbers of folks that are volunteering. And I asked them specifically, where are they asking for volunteers? And they said on their individual web pages. And I saw right away that the issue was if people aren't going to the web pages directly, then they don't know that the organization needs volunteers. So I came back to the station and told Carl, we need to do something about this. We need to fill in the hole. And my idea was to create a simple page that had like Excel spreadsheets with information that you'd go see the information, get the phone number, and go to it. And Carl, being the ingenuitive person that he is, said, Chuck, we can make it better than that. We can invest in software and create a page that's interactive and an environment that helps deliver volunteers to where they need to be. So we came up with this volunteernwi.org platform that allows people organizations that need donors to post their organization, what their needs are, how many folks they need them, where in Northwest Indiana this volunteering is supposed to happen. And then people who are looking to volunteer can just log onto the site, type in either the type of organization they'd like to be with or the area in which they'd like to volunteer, and that's populated on this site. There's also a calendar, so the organizations that are involved can post events that are going on, and it kind of helps planning, because if you see an event already there, an organization might not schedule at the same time, which helps out. But there's also going to be tools in there to be able to track the number of hours a volunteer does, which correlates to money for the organizations. But speaking of money, because of the support that we're going to get for this site, it's going to be free to vendors who post information on it, as well as free for people to come and find volunteerism.
The Lakeshore Public Media is a nonprofit organization, and I want to be clear. Is this a digital platform that was developed specifically for nonprofit organizations to use, or can any organization utilize the new NWI Volunteer Hub?
Yeah, absolutely. It's not limited to nonprofit organizations. We've actually had discussions with Mayor Milton and Gary on how his administration can use this to organize their community volunteers who are doing some amazing work in the city there. And we understand that it might not be a registered nonprofit, or it might be a small community group of volunteers who get together and do park cleanups. It could be, you know, a wide range of things. And so we didn't limit it to just nonprofits. And that's why, you know, again, you don't need to have a tax identification number to put in there to get, you know, your opportunities up. Lakeshore will monitor it to make sure that, you know, that all the organizations on there are legit. And if we have any questions, we'll reach out. But for the most part, we wanted this to just be anybody, any organization, any community that needs volunteers in order to become, you know, in order to have success in what they're trying to accomplish can use this tool.
I think that's awesome that you said, and Chuck, you can chime in. I think it's awesome that you added that it's not just a nonprofit organization, but just thinking about all of the government entities that are out here that need volunteers, especially you mentioned Gary, they are working on blight in that community. But a city like Gary, being able to utilize this to mobilize volunteers, I think is so awesome.
And there's going to be a calendar, a community event calendar on the site as well. So nonprofits, small businesses, municipal entities that have an event that they want to promote, it can be on that calendar where it's a one-stop where people come in to find out what's going on in the area. We just want to be a resource to help shed a light on all the other resources that already exist in Northwest Indiana, and we want to do so through this volunteer hub. Once again, at volunteernwi.org.
Absolutely. Now, Carl, whenever I go past your office, I always hear chatter about the new NWI Volunteer Hub. And again, we are all just so excited about what this will mean for volunteerism here in the region. Now, to better prepare myself for our conversation today, I spent a little bit of time just on the website trying to familiarize myself and putting myself in the place of our listening audience and obviously the user. And I must say, the website is pretty intuitive. Not only are local organizations able to list volunteer opportunities via the NWI Volunteer Hub, but the site also provides the ability to track volunteer hours and impact on the organization. You can also schedule volunteer shifts, and it allows for on-site volunteer check-in, and so much more. Take a moment to walk our audience through the website step-by-step on how everything works.
Yeah, so you're right, Dee, that this is definitely a really valuable tool for nonprofits and other organizations who need volunteers, but it's also a really easy tool for people who are looking for volunteer opportunities. So as an individual, you can go onto the same website and you can plug in your needs and then find opportunities that make sense for you and align with things that you're interested in. But all of that starts by just going to volunteernwi.org. When you do that, that lands you on Lakeshore's website with a little description about the hub and what its intention is. And then there's a button right there that says enter the NWI Volunteer Hub. When you click that, you are actually in the hub at that point. And there's a blue button on there that says volunteer now. That's for the individuals. So then I can go in and type in my location, my interest. I mean, we have all sorts of filters and ways to, kind of disseminate different volunteer opportunities depending on interests and family focus needs and wheelchair accessible, whatever it might be. And right below that blue button is another link that says click here to register your organization. And when you click that, again, another window will open up and ask you to input some information about your organization. Pretty basic, nothing, it doesn't ask for EIN numbers or any kind of tax identification number, just really general information about your organization, the type of needs that you have, the type of organization you are, who you serve, and then you enter in all the information, click submit, and you're on your way. You have a profile then. And as Chuck stated, that the organizations can then go in and assign what the dollar value is to a volunteer hour, so that this way, at the end of a month or a quarter or a year, they can see what the impact of volunteers have been on their organization, which I know from my position here at Lakeshore, that's valuable information for grants, for solicitations to major donors and all that kind of, all of those things. But as an individual, you can also get something called a volunteer resume. So an honor society student who needs to show that they've put in some volunteer work, or an individual who's part of an organization or a company that requires volunteerism, they can log their hours on this, and then that makes sure that at the end of, again, any time period, they can pull that volunteer resume and see exactly what impact they've had as an individual on the organizations in the community, which organizations that was with. And then there's a lot of seamless tools between the network and also an app that you can download. There's links on there to keep you updated when the organizations that you follow have new opportunities or when new opportunities are in the area. So there's a lot of really good functionality. It's intended to be useful, and we needed to make sure that it was easy to use, it was useful, and it covered all the things that people and organizations need, and that's some of the stuff that we feel like does that.
Carl, you know what? I think that is so awesome. So often we hear someone saying, how can I get involved and make a difference in my community?
but they may not know how to get in contact with the right person at an organization, or they may not necessarily know how to connect their gifts and or talents with the opportunity that is the right fit for them. That alone, being able to connect the community members directly with organizations, private business, I just think that is just so awesome. And so it's awesome that Lakeshore Public Media is leading the charge on this.
Yeah, and we're excited because obviously an advantage that we have too is that we have television and radio and our community engagement events and all that that we can use to help spread the word. And Chuck and I have already been doing that a little word of mouth ahead of the full launch of the hub. You know, Chuck was invited to speak at an event that our friends at Wintrust invited us to about planned giving. We've mentioned it at a couple chambers, Crossroad Chamber events. We held our Learn with Lakeshore event in Crown Point at Bulldog Park and had a lot of our nonprofit friends out there, spread the word there. And so we're really going to lean on our partners in the community, but also the organizations that use this hub will have a toolkit that we're putting together for them that will have some graphics they can use on social media, drop into email blasts, put on their website to make sure that people know that they can find them on the hub and you know, find ways to give back on the hub. And so we're all just, you know, it's going to be a team effort to make sure that this thing has legs and continues to grow in Northwest Indiana.
Chuck, again, the NWI Volunteer Hub officially launched several weeks ago. And when you and Carl are out in the community at community events, meetings, engagement opportunities, you're serving as ambassadors or evangelists, if you will, sharing the good news about this new digital platform. I want to go back for a moment, though. Why did Lakeshore Public Media take the lead on this initiative? And to that point, what has the response been who are using this platform to connect volunteer opportunities?
It's an example of Lakeshore filling a hole that was needed. We went to the volunteer festival there in Crown Point, and once we mentioned just a couple times that we were going to start this hub, people were just, there was a buzz and people were coming to the table. How do I get on? How do I put my needs on there? One gentleman said, I need large men to lift heavy things. And I thought, well, you can put that on your profile and let that be known that that's what you need is someone to do some heavy lifting for you. But it's all about also the resource that Carl talked about of it's bookkeeping. It helps you keep track of your volunteers and what they're doing for the organization. Helps you monetize what it is that's being done. A lot of the nonprofits reached out to us and told us without volunteers, they would have to raise hundreds of thousands of extra dollars just to stay alive.
Wow.
So it's not just about quality of life and helping people, but that's a main part of it. But it's about keeping the organizations alive and living. And we saw that need and we decided to create volunteernwi.org to help with that.
Carl, I want to turn to you for a moment specifically because it's your team that heads up the technical aspect of this new digital platform, right? So we live in a day and age where many people are concerned about their cybersecurity. And not only individuals, but organizations as well. And so someone may be listening and they may want to ask this question. Is this new site safe and how will it be monitored?
Oh, first of all, there's not a lot of personal or private information. Like I said, from an organization standpoint, you don't even have to put in your tax identification number or anything like that. And as an individual, it's pretty much just your location so that this way you can sort opportunities, your first and last name, and then really just the type of interest you want. So an email, phone number so that you can be notified. So there's not a lot of sensitive information on it, but obviously it lives. That's why we have it kind of hosted on our website. This way it gets the same securities and protection that our website has, and we definitely want to encourage people to, you know, not worry about the information that they put on there because we're not sharing it with anybody either. It's really just the information that's needed to keep that communication flowing between the organizations who need volunteers and the individuals who want to volunteer. And so there's not a lot of worry there.
Yeah, if any other site is asking for your social security number to volunteer, don't do it. Go to volunteernwi.org and sign up there or find the organization that you'd like to volunteer for at that site.
Absolutely. Now, there are apps for everything, right? Especially in today's high-tech, high-touch world. So I understand there is an app for this as well. So take a moment to tell us about the app.
Yeah, when you visit the website at volunteernwi.org, you can see
what was that website?
Volunteernwi.org.
That's right.
And when you get there, you can definitely find links there. Once you sign up as an organization or an individual, you'll get an email to confirm that you know you're on the hub now, and then give you a link to some resources. And one of those will be the app. And again, the app is really just an extension again to make sure that if an organization that you're interested in volunteering with has an opportunity, that app will allow it to, you know, really notify you via email or text or whatever it is you choose, rather than having to log in every time to wait and see if, you know, and then check the opportunities. So yeah, there's an app there, and Lakeshore Public Media has our own app that you can find in app stores. But either way, we're trying to make it very easy to connect with the hub and very easy to use.
Before I let you two go, again, obviously, I love having you guys in here to share what is happening in the front of the house. It's very rare that I have the opportunity to have you guys back here. But let me just ask you guys this before I let you go. So someone may not be as tech savvy as the three of us. They may have questions, not necessarily an individual, but an organization. If someone does, in fact, have a question outside of being able to just look at the website, is there anyone here that they can reach at Lakeshore Public Media?
Yeah, so they can always reach us at digital@lakeshorepublicmedia.org. And that's an email group that goes to a few of us. So somebody will see it. We'll get back to you. But again, we try to keep it very easy to use. So we're expecting to be able to just, give some really simple directions if somebody's confused or has a question, or just jump on a phone call and walk through it step by step.
219-756-5656. That number again is 219-756-5656. Just let the person on the other end of the line know that I need more information with volunteernwi.org because I want to volunteer, or I'm an organization that wants to be on the site.
Chuck Roberts is the president and CEO of Lakeshore Public Media, and Carl Keurig is the vice president of development. Chuck, Carl, again, thank you for joining me in studio, sharing all of the information about the new NWI Volunteer Hub. This new digital platform would go a long way to connect community members with volunteer opportunities, and so we're just all so excited.
Thanks for having us, Dee.
Thanks, Dee.
To learn more about the NWI Volunteer Hub and create a profile as an individual or an organization, visit www.volunteernwi.org. For more information on how to support Lakeshore Public Media's Volunteer Hub initiative, please email sponsorship@lakeshorepublicmedia.org. And you're listening to Regionally Speaking on listener-supported Lakeshore Public Media. During arguably one of the most popular TED Talks on diversity, actress and activist America Ferrera stood center stage on a red dot and declared, "My identity is my superpower, not my obstacle." And that speaks to the leadership acumen, cultural genius, described in the new book, The Souls of Queer Folk, How Understanding LGBTQ+ Culture Can Transform Your Leadership Practice, by Dr. Joel A. Davis Brown, which debuted earlier this year. He's here with us today to discuss his book, as well as the power of queer wisdom. Joel, thank you so much for joining us on Lakeshore Public Media.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
So, Joel, you know, they say never judge a book by its cover, but I have to be honest with you. The title of your book, as well as the cover, really caught my eye. This new book, which I highly recommend for everyone to read, no matter where you sit on the organizational chart within your company, but especially for those who are in positions of leadership, positions in which you are entrusted with managing and motivating a team, right? So, Joel, tell our listening audience, what was the origin of the book? And to that point, what was the inspiration behind the title?
Sure. Those are very good questions. The book came about by accident, and I'll tell you why. I did my research on the community, the LGBTQ community, as a member of the community, wanting to understand more about what does it mean to really be LGBTQ. You hear so much about how important it is to include the community, how important it is to support the LGBTQ community, but I thought, do we really understand what a community stands for? And I say that, again, as a member of the community, as a gay man. So my research led me to identify, you know, some core values. And in looking at those core values, what I realized is that much of what we stand for is what the world needs. We're in a time right now where things are becoming more unpredictable, volatile, complex, and ambiguous, and social scientists actually call that a VUCA. They say we're living in a VUCA world. And I thought to myself, who better to understand how to deal with volatility, uncertainty, complexity, and ambiguity than those of us who live at the margins of society, those of us who have to deal with discrimination, bias, repression of any sort. And from that vantage point, I realized that our community actually has a lot to teach the world about how to navigate difficult times and how to be adaptable. Now, of course, the LGBTQ community is not the only community who can lay claim to that. What I would say is that our community's experience and journey has been informed by the journeys of many people, including African-Americans, Latinx communities, women, immigrants, people of different faith traditions, different generational cohorts, and of course, sexual and gender minorities. And so that's what led to this book, because I really do think it's a leadership book, not just in the sense of leadership in a corporate context, but leadership in a social, personal context. How do you lead yourself and how do you lead others? Because you can't lead others unless you do know how to lead yourself and lead life. And then as I started to really think about the impact of the book, how we could really reframe how people look at the queer community, harken back to the souls of the book that W.E.B. Du Bois wrote, The Souls of Colored Folk and Black Folk, which really was a landmark book for the African-American community in terms of helping the large society understand what is it like to be Black in this society. So that's why I chose the title The Souls of Queer Folk, to reflect and mirror the souls of Black folk, which I hope will have a similar impact in terms of how society looks at the LGBTQ community.
Great, great. Now, Joel, your book is about one of my favorite topics, not just in the workplace, but in life, and that's leadership, right? You spent a great deal of time in this book unpacking transformational leadership. Chapter one is titled The Leadership Quandary and opens with a poem you wrote 20 years ago. And as you reflect on the poem in your book, you share, the more we see, quote, misdirection and poor guidance, the more we can recognize good leadership, end quote. So I'll pose this question to you. What makes a transformational leader?
I think that what makes a transformational leader is someone who, first of all, looks internally at themselves and just says, how do I grow? How do I become better? There's someone who's able to model a growth mindset. There's someone who has convictions and principles, someone who wants to create a better outcome and better world for everyone involved. So that's a transformational leader. There's someone who recognizes that the change has to be internal and external. They are parallel circumstances. And what I've seen a lot, and I'm sure you know, you and others have seen this as well, particularly over the last 10 years, we've seen a lot of leaders who've been ego-driven, a lot of leaders, elected officials, pundits, who have been only out for personal or individual gain. And that's not transformational. Transformational is how you're able to make the world a better place and how you're able to take the world in a different direction, which makes it more inclusive and better for everyone. So that's how I thought about transformational leadership and how I continue to think about transformational leadership. And what makes transformational leadership so challenging is that it requires a person to say, how can I be better? And what I say to leaders all the time is, if you're not growing, your organization won't grow. And that's sometimes a difficult truth for people to hear. But the reality is, if you don't grow, your family doesn't grow, your community doesn't grow, your team doesn't grow, your organization doesn't grow. And so it first has to have an internal compass, or you have to have an internal compass and have an internal directive there to say, how can I grow and be better? And then I think you help to lift up and impact others. And so for me, it's about, what legacy are you leaving? Who else has been transformed? And what's the larger social impact of what you've done? So when you think about those types of people, I think about people from our history, whether it's somebody like Sojourner Truth or Coretta Scott King, Billie Jean King. I mean, just numbers of people out there who have made life better, who've been able to create a pathway and also, you know, create a kind of a more or less a historical record for people to follow to say, this is how I can navigate these same types of challenges, and this is what I can do to be better. And that's what a transformational leader is for me.
To that point, having all of those qualities that you just listed, how would you say the LGBTQ plus community exhibit transformational leadership?
Well, you think about coming out, which I know for many people is, you know, this mysterious process, or many people reduce coming out to simply notifying someone else that you might be LGBTQ. But that's actually the culmination of coming out. Coming out actually begins with someone doing the internal kind of going to the soul, going to the spirit and saying, who am I? How am I? Who am I in relationship to the world? How can I be better? What part of who I am is really being served here? And how can I really honor my truest values? And so when you do that, when you really take time to think about who you are, that by itself is the beginning of the transformational leadership process. There are many different aspects to the community that I think reflect transformational leadership, whether it's the, you know, social justice orientation, whether it's the idea of being resilient and authentic, whether it's the idea of building community and recognizing the interconnectedness of us all. It's the idea of being more creative, being innovative, and not relying on the different things that society tells you that you have to think, or the things that you have to abide by, questioning. I think also having this perceptiveness to be aware of what's happening around you and what's happening within you, and to always entertain how can I be better and how am I being influenced by what's happening in the world, and how do I also influence what's happening in the world. These are things that the community has done instinctively, and I think in many ways subconsciously at some level, but these are things that oftentimes do go are under-recognized and are not really valued within the community, but people have to do just to survive. And so I think the opportunity and the lesson from the community is how can the world be more intentional, and how can we use quote unquote our superpowers in a more intentional way to be and have more impact. If we can think about how to be more authentic, more value driven, more discerning, more community minded, more resilient, more creative, engage in more innovative, non-binary thinking, when we can have more awareness of, you know, who we are, not just in terms of our minds, but also in terms of the wisdom that our body gives us. I think that helps to inform and build and hopefully support leaders that I think are more relatable, more accessible, and again, recognize that the individual can't survive and be great without the collective also being great as well.
You know, Joe, we're living in a time that, quite frankly, I don't think any other generation before us has experienced. We are navigating a pandemic. We're facing climate change. And you alluded to this earlier. You know, we're seeing a political divide in our country right now, including this anti-woke movement that sadly will probably have a long-lasting negative effect on our youth, and so on. And so I was intrigued by one of the terms you used throughout the book. It's a term I've never heard, and it's a term that you've actually trademarked, right? Can you unpack that phrase, as well as what it means in context of leadership?
I'd love to. So when we think about leadership, and I've been just as guilty of this as anybody, I used to think of leadership as something that, first of all, only certain people have. And then I started to think of leadership as something that you have to get an MBA to learn about, or you have to go to some business school, or you have to have been some titan of industry in order to understand anything about leadership. But really, when we think about our day-to-day lives, many of us exhibit leadership every single day. The mothers who are, you know, working to make sure that their kids are able to get to school and grow up to be contributing productive members of society. The people who are getting by on few resources but are showing the grit and the resilience to fight every single day to get ahead. That's leadership. But then I also took that idea a step further and said, for those of us who live at the margin of society, and again, this isn't just LGBTQ people. This could be women, African-Americans, immigrants, people who come from different faith traditions. There is an acumen. There's a social and intellectual acumen that you have to possess to get ahead. So when we think about the LGBTQ community, sometimes, let's say, for example, if you're a transgender person of color living in, let's say, a rural part of the country, just to get through the day, you probably had to do a number of things, whether it's code switch, which means changing up your language to fit the circumstance and using your language in a way to navigate a multicultural environment, whether it's showing resilience, whether it's being adaptable, whether it's you showing a level of authenticity so that you can honor yourself in a certain way. You've had to do many different things, probably without even thinking, just to get through the day, much less to lead a team or to lead an organization. And that acumen, if you will, that social leadership acumen, is what I call cultural genius. It is the intellect and the insight and the wisdom that we've gained, that people have by virtue of their cultural pathway, that allows them to succeed. And that is the essence of leadership, right? Leadership is not just you helping to secure greater dividends for your shareholders, or you completing a merger and acquisition. It is simply how you being able to effectively lead yourself and achieve a positive outcome, even if that positive outcome is simply staying alive, It is simply you being able to make sure that you have food on the table. And in many cases, it might simply be you having some measure of dignity by the time you deal with all the different isms and biases that exist within the world. So that is what cultural genius is. And the LGBTQ community has a cultural genius that has allowed us to not only survive, but to thrive. And, you know, as I said in the book and as I've said elsewhere, there's something brilliant about any community that can survive, you know, like this year, 600 plus anti-LGBTQ bills that have been introduced across the country.
Right.
So if you can survive that, if you can survive decades, if not centuries, of people telling you that you're ungodly, you're unworthy, you don't have a right to be in a society, you're a second-class citizen, then that's something I want to study, and that's something I want to emulate. And I think many more people should try to emulate that, because whatever that is, that it factor allows people to grow and to groom and can help people to survive in ways that we perhaps have taken for granted and we haven't even considered before.
So I want to park on this topic of the movement led by many conservatives in our country to be anti-woke,
sure.
Right? And you've just spoke briefly about dozens of anti-LGBTQ plus bills that are on the books around the country right now, right? So chapter 19 of your book, The Souls of Queer, Dismantling Systemic Oppression of LGBTQ plus People One Word at a Time. And I'm thinking about controversies such as the boycott against a beer company because of an ad campaign featuring a transgender social media influencer, or the big box store that leaned into pressure to move a LGBTQ plus Pride Month themed display. And even more recently, workers at a popular coffee chain banding together to protest over the removal of Pride Month themed decor. Talk about how such moves are harmful to the LGBTQ plus community and what big organizations can do better.
The reason they're harmful, and I'm so glad you asked this question, Dee, is because they look performative, right? So what it basically says is we as a society, we as organizations, we as corporations should only be concerned about civil rights when there's money to be made. And as soon as there's any pressure, as soon as there's any pushback, then we should relent. We should acquiesce to what someone else is telling us that we should do. That runs contrary to the idea of allyship, and it runs contrary to the idea of leadership and, frankly, equity. One of the things that I think about all the time is, my brother says this, is, can you imagine if, you know, people like Sojourner Truth or Harriet Tubman were so easily swayed by, you know, the whims of the world and by, you know, people that say you shouldn't do something, we wouldn't be where we are today. Or if you think about Dr. King, if he had been so easily swayed by criticism. And that's the thing that I think people don't understand about activism, is that activism has become reduced to Facebook likes, posting on social media. But what it requires is a level of conviction. If you really care about equity and you understand the lives that you're trying to support, whether they're LGBTQ or otherwise, then you should understand that our lives are based upon resilience, not giving in and caving in simply because someone pushes back. That's what Pride actually came from, was a rebellion where people said, we're not going to give in, we're not going to fall back, we're not going to accept less than we deserve. And so when companies do that, it makes you question whether they're really on board with supporting any type of social justice initiative and any type of DEIB initiative, diversity, equity, inclusion, and belonging initiative. So the first thing I always say to corporations is, when they say we want to do this work, be clear as to why. And understand that this work is not just about posting rainbows on your website. It's not about having corporate floats. And it's not about you looking the part. You have to really show that you're committed to this. And that means weathering storms, understanding that you are going to have people who are going to say, we don't want to support your brand. And you might even have, quote unquote, campaigns against wokeism, whatever that means. But if you really are about making sure that the world is better for everyone, you have to have bedrock principles, and you have to have the level of commitment to show that this is something that you're supporting for the long term. Much like the people who live, you know, are part of these communities every single day. If queer people gave up every time someone pushed back, we wouldn't be where we were. So companies should look to that example and say, how can we show more commitment, and how can we honor the example of minoritized communities and not give in so easily, and also make sure that our gestures are not performative, not just for the LGBTQ community, but for everybody. Because again, these issues are not just relegated to our community. They're part and parcel of issues related to anyone who's seeking equity, whether it's women, undocumented people, people who are Latinx, people who come from different faith traditions, everybody, anybody part of a multicultural progressive society wants there to be human rights for everyone. That doesn't mean that you have to agree, but when you come to the marketplace, when you come to work, when you come into a store, when you leave your house, you have to recognize that there are going to be people who are different. Mm-hmm. And that's what makes our country and our world great. And if you don't understand that, then unfortunately, I think there's an opportunity for people to recognize that the contributions in this world would not be what it is without the contributions of everybody, including the LGBTQ community.
Joe, Section 3 of your book focuses on LGBTQ plus leadership, the value of queer folk. So is that what you mean when you say queer-minded?
Correct. Queer, and you know, some people have said to me, so are you basically saying that we have to be queer in order to adopt these leadership principles? And I say, no, you don't have to be a member of the community. But what you should do and what you hopefully can realize is that, you know, what I say is you can be queer-minded. You can learn from anybody. I grew up in a community and in a family that said anybody can teach you something. Sometimes those lessons are good and sometimes those lessons are bad. In this instance, I think the lessons are outstanding and they can be transformative. So what you want to understand is by looking at this community and learning, reading, getting to know people who are part of the community, recognizing that queer people are part of your network, your professional network, they're your neighbors, they're part of your family, they might even be you if you're looking in the mirror. There's many different ways you can think about it. And the thing that I want people to take away from this is how can we be more authentic to who we are? How can we honor our values, each of us? And also, how can we make sure that we live our life in an unabashed way? And I think most people would do better and do well to say, today I will do better if I honor who I am and stop hiding from what makes me great, what makes me special, what makes me talented, and what would give great contribution to the world. That's what the LGBTQ community does in a nutshell. And again, there are specific things that we do. Not everybody, you know, because you're LGBTQ doesn't mean that you honor or do every single or have every, share every single value. That's the beauty of our community, though, is that based on the values, everybody shows up in their own unique way, and I think collectively move society and humanity forward. So those are the ideas. You know, like I said, there's 9 different values that are highlighted in the book that I think we do a good job of emulating and highlighting. And I think people, again, if they read the book, if they get to know the community, they can learn more about what helps us to be, I think, good leaders. And I think even members of the community would do well to remember what we do and who we are and how that serves us as we try to be better members of society and better global citizens.
Finally, Joel, someone may be listening right now and saying, hey, other ethnic or social communities exhibit leadership, so why focus on the LGBTQ plus community? In the time that we have left, please share why your book, The Soul of Queer Folk, is so timely right now.
I think because, number one, the queer community is an emerging community. It exists all over the globe. And the LGBTQ community comprises all these other communities. So it's not one, it's not distinct. We are great and informed by the wisdom of a lot of different communities. And at the same time, our community is one that is particularly under attack right now, specifically being targeted for whatever reason, political gain, fundraising, people just having their biases. And I think it's time for us in 2023 to really take a step back and realize and ask ourselves, why is it that this community poses in so many circles such a threat? Because people don't understand who we are. And when you have, you know, countries like Uganda where people are being killed and murdered, or Saudi Arabia, or even here in the United States, where, you know, murders of trans women are at an all-time high, particularly in, you know, Brazil, the UK, and the United States. It's really a crucial moment for our community, and it's a watershed moment in history. What we're seeing right now is unprecedented. When you have, you know, for example, organizations saying there are travel advisories for places like Florida. So things are pretty dire, particularly for queer youth and particularly for trans youth. And I want to make sure that there's anyone listening, that we don't have any more babies, any more people who lose their lives simply because someone doesn't understand or respect who they are. That's why it's important. And that doesn't mean or act to diminish the struggles of other communities. But I would say particularly for the LGBTQ community right now, our well-being is in peril because of the legislative onslaught that we've seen in the U.S. And what we're frankly seeing all around the world, this isn't an isolated issue. And so that's why it's really important for people to recognize the beauty and the complexity of our community, one that extends everywhere, and one that I think a community that's going to become even more visible in the months and years and decades to come.
Dr. Joel A. Davis Brown is a sought-after public speaker, poet, entrepreneur, and self-described nerd specializing in organizational strategy and culture, transformational leadership, global inclusion, executive coaching, conflict resolution, and strategic storytelling, as well as an LGBTQ plus community member and activist. Joel, once again, thank you so much for joining us on Lakeshore Public Media.
Thank you, and take care of yourself as well. What you're doing is very important. Having a free and independent media, and particularly in this time, is so important. So I thank you. I appreciate your voice, and thank you for you just making yourself available for the conversation.
And welcome back to Regionally Speaking on listener-supported Lakeshore Public Media.
Why don't they just get a job? That's the seemingly rhetorical question many people ask when they encounter a homeless individual. Middle-class working families across the country, including our own neighbors, are experiencing homelessness at an alarming rate, oftentimes forced out of their homes because of rising costs. The image of homelessness is often one of tent cities in the metropolis area, or maybe even someone pleading for help on the side of the highway. Well, a local nonprofit organization is dedicated to changing the narrative about the unhoused in our communities. One formerly unhoused family shares how their experience of living in an extended stay hotel served as a catalyst to be an evangelist for change, as well as give back to their community with several philanthropic efforts to raise funds as well as resources. Joining me now is Michelle D. Burnett, one of the founders of DBC Gifts of Love. Michelle, thank you for joining us today on Regionally Speaking.
Thank you.
Absolutely. So, Michelle, before we get into a big event that you have planned coming up next week in Flossmoor, Illinois, take a moment to tell your story and what has led to your passion, the advocacy work that you do for the unhoused in Southland, Chicago.
Yes. My husband and I, with our family, found ourselves going through temporary homelessness. And people think homelessness is just the people you see on the street. But the working people that work every day, there are homeless people and people don't know about that. They're not aware. And so when this happened, we found ourselves in this new realm of, wow, homelessness. And so we went to register our daughter for school, and they talked about the McKinney-Vento program. And we were like, what's that? That's a federal act where they're able to assist people, even at the school level, to help them with some basic things, school supplies, book bags, maybe uniforms, things of that nature. And so when the school helped us out with that, we decided at that point we wanted to give back when we got out of that situation. We lived at the Wood Springs Hotel, which is an extended stay, for over a year. And during that time, we saw other families like that. And so right now, full circle, this is our third year with our 5K. We ended up back at the Wood Springs again while we closed on the house. And this time we were in ownership and we were able to help out, and we'll be doing some things in collaboration with the Wood Springs to be able to help people in the community out.
Wow, that is awesome. So, Michelle, I'm glad you brought this up. You spoke about when someone think of homelessness, they don't necessarily think of a family like yours, right? Your family, as you've so eloquently shared, your family was essentially living the American dream. And I should share with our listening audience that you were the owners of your own businesses as well. So take a moment, if you don't mind, to share what led you to become unhoused, you and your family.
Well, most people do not realize that all it takes is one to two things, and then you will become like that. We were in a rental situation, and we just could not keep up with our rent. And even though we had money to afford housing, when you get marks on your credit, or if you're in business, you get that proof of income, a lot of these large national corporations say, well, you need to put either more money down or things of that nature, and we didn't have it. So someone gave us money for one night's stay, and then we were able to, it's amazing, you can't get housing, but you could pay extended stay, which was like about between $2,000 to $3,000 a month. While we worked in our business every day, our daughter went to school on honor roll, in band,
went to all the things that we normally would do, went to church every Sunday, and people never knew.
Wow, that is amazing. Again, because the topic that we're discussing today, it's important and it's necessary because, you know, when most people think of homelessness, the unhoused, particularly in greater Chicagoland, they think of the images that they see on the news or in media of downtown Chicago, of Lower Wacker Drive, of even the tent cities that they may see around the city, including in Grant Park. And the opposite is just so true about the reception of the outskirts of Chicago, the suburban areas. They think of a home, they think of that white picket fence, the perfect situation, etc. But your lived experience counters that narrative. So take a moment to talk about how homelessness is impacting Chicago Southland in particular.
Well, it's something that's not really discussed. And several years ago, a friend of mine, we had talked about doing a laundry cart to pass out to people that were going through homelessness, because I began to share my journey with her and they were there walking with us through this. When that happened, they went to a local school district and they said, oh no, we don't have homeless in our area. So no one believed that there were homeless people. Just because you see people not, like you said, on the street, there are homeless people out there. On the website, we have statistics that we got from the South Suburban Homeless Shelter, South Suburban Path, and we got our statistics from there. And it talked about the number of students that are homeless, and different school districts see that there's an increase in it. And I think it's the Sauk Village School District. They even have an initiative that they have where they have laundry facilities for people now because of this. It's being more pervasive.
Wow.
And then with taxes going up, there's going to be more homeless people. And even at the hotel that we just got out of, because we just were gracious to be closing our home, there were families we saw there with children, and the buses pull up, and this is their narrative temporarily.
Wow, wow. Now, Michelle, full transparency to you and our listening audience. So I, too, live in the south suburbs of Chicago, right? And I'm thinking about the communities in which you're speaking about, the communities in which your organization shares. And a lot of our listening audience, many people who live in Northwest Indiana, they may be second or third generation here in Northwest Indiana, but their families probably grew up in the south suburbs. And when I'm thinking about these areas, I'm thinking about Flossmoor. That's the community in which your event will be held next week, which we'll talk about in a minute. Those homes are upper six figures. I'm thinking about Sauk Village. Those homes are quite expensive. And again, you do not associate with those communities in particular. Linwood is another community in which those homes are $400,000 or $500,000. You don't think about community members being unhoused in that community. And so I am just so grateful that you are shining a light on what it is really and truly to be unhoused. And as you shared, it can only take one or two incidents in which your family can be displaced. And so, again, we are just so grateful that you are sharing your story and at the same time that you are helping so many community members.
But it's a hush-hush thing in the suburbs. No, that only happens in the city that people think, but it's more prevalent in the suburbs than we talk about. So why we do what we do is to shine a light to let people know this is a problem, this needs to be addressed, and we've been there, we've done that, and we're here to shine the light on it, to be able to help out, to provide resources for people. And people really don't, there are people that are raised in the suburbs, and the narrative has changed now. Because of after COVID, people have lost their jobs, they're not making as much. A lot of things have changed where people could have been raised in the suburbs are now the new homeless people. The people right now at the hotel that we just got out of, just left, they're regular people. They had regular addresses. They may not have necessarily been from the typical, oh, I was in Chicago. They're families that just can't make it anymore. Everything is high now, and nothing went down in price. And these things have to be taken into consideration, and the taxes. Mm-hmm. So this is something that really has to be put in the forefront, because it's going to be it's going to be more people now, especially when these new tax bills come up.
Now, Michelle, speaking of shining a light on, sadly, this epidemic of homelessness for so many of our community members, you have a huge event that's coming up on Saturday, June 15th. So take a moment to tell us about your third annual DBC Gifts of Love Community 5K that you'll be hosting in Flossmoor.
Yes, we've been giving back book bags, school supplies first for 7 years, but this is our third annual 5K. So what we do, this is raises awareness to homelessness in the South Suburban region that is not to be looked over like, oh, it's your problem. This is a problem that is for all. When one is homeless, it affects everyone. And the event that we're doing is a community 5K. It's a family-friendly event on Saturday, June 15th. Check-in is at 8 a.m., and it's going to be held at the Forest Preserves right there on Walmer Road in Flossmoor. And we'll be having jumpy houses. We have game truck that will be there. We'll have our Family Christian Health Center, other vendors there, DJs, food, so people can walk. And then we're going to be honoring five community fathers who give back in the community and help out those that are in need.
Wow, that is awesome. And also, I understand that your organization also leads other initiatives, including supplies, throughout the year in an effort to support families impacted by homelessness in the South Suburbs of Chicago. So can you share what some of the other initiatives are that you guys support?
Yes, one of our strongest is our annual book bag and school supply drive. 3 years ago, when we started the book bags added on with the school supplies, we collected 32. We were like, okay, it's a start. Then the next year was 150, and last year we had 851. Everything that we collect goes directly to the school districts, and last year was so many, we gave out to nonprofit organizations that fit the criteria and made sure that it got to the population.
Michelle, before I let you go, if anyone would like more information about your organization, if they would like to make a donation, if they would like to volunteer for this 5K, or if they would like to register for this 5K event, how can they do so?
They can go directly to the website, which is www.dbcgiftsoflove.org. That is dbcgiftsoflove.org.
Michelle Burnett is the founder of DBC Gifts of Love. Michelle, thank you so much for joining us on Regionally Speaking. We are just so grateful that you spent time with us today, and we hope that you have 1,600 bags that you're able to fill and support community with this big event.
Thank you so much. I appreciate you.
And that's it for Regionally Speaking for this week. Thanks to our guest, and we'll be back next week with an all-new show.